Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.
And now, Hangar 56 Media presents Spike's Car Radio, a downloadable Cars and Coffee, hosted by writer, comedian, and automotive enthusiast Spike Ferriston. Now, here's Spike.
Who needs music? Who needs music when you've got that? Do you know what that is? I'm sure you do. Listen to it. That's YouTube. It's Saturday. It's Le Mans, the 24th running, the 100th anniversary. And how fun is it that you can go to YouTube and get inside the cars with a live stream? I've been live streaming all morning, watching the different cars. Right now, we're listening to one of the Toyotas blast around the track. Johnny Lieberman's there with his horrible beard on an electric bike, hopefully still on the track, dodging some of these cars. And it's anybody's race. There have been crashes in the first 4 hours. It crashes all over the place. Our friend Scott Dixon spun out and then we got back on the track. I'm pretty sure I just saw the Tom Brady Porsche 963 hit the wall. What the hell? How are you guys? We have a fabulous show. We have a lot to talk about. It's just me and Zuckerman today. Good morning, Mr. Zuckerman.
Good morning.
How are you?
Terrific.
This is a show like the old days. And I think, no, I mean, there's so much going on. We could go 3 hours. Do you know this is our 6 year anniversary, Zuckerman?
Are you kidding
me? You've been with me from the start.
And 6 years.
Six. And how nice. It's just me and you. I owe you a debt of gratitude, my friend. You've helped me build this into the Spike's Car Radio empire.
Well, thank you for having me. 6 years old. That's kindergarten. We're ready for kindergarten with this show.
We're just getting started.
Yes.
We're just getting started. It's an old rule of show business that if you just stick around long enough, if you just jam the talent down America's throats, they'll swallow it and go, all right, I don't like them. I don't like the show, but I accept them.
Am I still your greatest comedic find, Ferriston?
Well, there's quite a few on that list.
Supposed to just say no.
But yes.
No, you're supposed
yes.
to say no.
I think I've pulled you from far outside of the entertainment circles into entertainment. Yeah, I would say for sure. I got to move this elephant tooth or I can't look at you. Anyway, yes, you are, Zuckerman. And sincerely, my thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Everybody is very happy to have you here and week after week talking about what's going on. Right now, it's Le Mans. And refresh my memory on this bet. I'm betting that Porsche is going to finish above Cadillac, correct?
That's with Lieberman.
Yeah.
And me, I just said, if Dixon wins, I give money to everybody I know. I think it was something like that. I just hand money out.
Well, he could. It's still very early in the race. But if you are, or if you did, I guess it's too late now. Next year, check it out. Check out these. I mean, the first thing I woke up in the morning, I went, oh, it's Le Mans Day. I totally forgot. Put it on the big TV, ended up waking everybody up, just pinging my YouTube right onto the big screen in my living room and just getting in the cars and doing laps. It was so much fun. It started raining right away. The weather there is awful all the time.
You think our government controls that too?
Yep, they absolutely do. You know they do. And And it's fun, and it's great, and I can't wait to keep watching, and it'll wrap up tomorrow morning, and that'll be that. But where do we start? And Johnny Lieberman's there. Have you seen Johnny's post?
I've seen him, and I've been texting with him.
He's so weird. You know, I love you, Johnny, but I try to get him on motorcycles all the time. He says he hates motorcycles, and he knows that I like electric bikes, and I don't – he was on the track – really cool, by the way, on an electric bike, doing a taking a look at the track, going around the track. And he was like, these things are fun.
He figured it out. Doy. Doy.
And I just went, really? That you, at this point in your journalistic career, are just now. And I, look, you know, I kind of know what he's talking about. Because back years ago, we were at Bill's, and Pat Dempsey was on the show. And he rolled up to that interview. We were recording at Bill's at the Malibu Kitchen.
I remember.
On an electric bike. And I said, hey, I've never tried one of those. What do they do? And he goes, here, try it. And I took a ride. And it was, and I experienced pedal assist for the first time. Like, what, 6 years ago? And I went, wow, this is a thing. That, I don't understand how he's just experiencing it now.
He's a pastrami journalist. I've said this. And he's regressive. He's like me.
Well, he's in the world of motorsports. There isn't many electric bikes, but the electric bike revolution is hilarious, and it's worth paying attention to. It's just like the electric vehicle.
I've been in touch with Storm Saunders.
Oh, you did? You called him up?
I called him up. His great advice to me, he said he was in China and suggested I go to the City of Industry and pick out the bike. And I said, Storm, that it may as well be China to me.
You should go there.
City of Industry?
I went there.
How far is it? 60 miles, right?
Yeah, but I did it. It's amazing. I went to his factory and everything's laid out there and it's really fun.
I don't got time for that.
You would really enjoy it.
I would enjoy it, but the idea of driving 120 miles on a work day.
I don't think it's 120 miles, one. And that's two, there's a good chance he'll just say, take a couple bikes.
Oh, well. Oh, yeah, that's a different story. That's a different story, but he's got to be.
All money is good. But you're getting a tour. It's like going to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. You're getting a tour from the guy. Willy Wonka is saying, come to my factory.
Will you go with me?
I'll go. For
okay,
sure.
If
I
you
love
go,
them.
I'll go.
We'll go in a fun car. We'll go do it. And you'll see this business up close. You know, right now, my two favorite brands are Saunders and Cake. And I've got a cake, Kalk, they call it. A Kalk.
Cake Kalk?
Something like that. It's an off-road electric motorcycle that I am in love with. I hope they forget that they dropped it in my garage, and I'm out in it every night having fun.
Are these the ones that the kids in Newport Beach are driving these things, doing wheelies, or is that Sorons?
Look, that's both. Yeah, there's this subset of bikes that are being used to, as they put it, thrash neighborhoods in California, and they're fun, and they are essentially motorcycles, and nobody's got them plated up. And it's a great time. It's a good time while it lasts. Eventually, there'll be so much of it that it will have to stop. But as we were recording last week, remember you saw that?
Yes.
That's the marauding that's going on. My son and I don't do that. We're very respectful.
Why not? Come on.
A lot of different reasons.
There's that guy in the neighborhood that you should...
Who's that?
You know, the dentist.
Oh, yeah. No, we're buddies with him now.
Yes, okay. We made peace?
Yeah, we made
peace. In our time? Okay.
Yeah, we did.
We will not harass him.
That was the guy that was blocking the front gate with his GT3. He's got a GT3. How can he not be a friend? He's a frenemy. I would say he's the perfect definition of a frenemy. He's someone we're friendly to, but he's also, you're not sure about him. But we talk all the time now.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I go up there when I'm up there riding. We talk all the time, but it's good. It's good. Anyway, let's get to some real stuff going on here. There's that. Secondly, Rolex just dropped a new watch on us. Oh, I should also mention Cameron Weiss from Weiss Watches is on in a little bit, and he's going to be addressing the I wouldn't call it a controversy, but the healthy debate that Joshua Shapiro of J.N. Shapiro Watches is the first all-American watchmaker.
I'd call it a controversy, and we started it.
Since Hamilton Watches in the 60s. And we dig in, and I'll introduce it. I'll tell you where the conversation goes. It was exciting, and it was fun, and I would not label it a controversy or even a debate. And you'll hear why in the interview. We'll wrap it up, and when you hear it, you'll go, oh, wow, I didn't. There's a very salient fact about Swiss watches in that interview that you're going to love. Anyway, Rolex dropped a 100th anniversary Daytona on us, I think a couple hours ago, Zuckerman.
I haven't even seen it.
This is quite a day. It's a black, one of the new black Daytonas where the 100 on the bezel is red. Daytona.
Oh, future collectible.
It is white gold. It is $56,000.
Well.
And it is a must-have. You got to have it. It's incredible looking. It's like the greatest one they've ever dropped. I lost my mind when I saw it. I don't understand why all this stuff is happening all at once. Le Mans and this. And
okay, I've never broached this. Is it possible to plan Z a watch?
Wow, that's tricky.
I think so. That's skin. It's skin and dirt.
Skin and skin cells and hairs.
Yeah.
I think it's completely irrelevant because, you know, we don't have the ability to get that watch. I could try. But I don't think we have the ability to acquire one. Now, Rolex is cozying up to us a little bit. And us, I mean the show. But
if they want to cozy, this is the right time to cozy. And then maybe they can get us a special expandable band because one of the biggest problems with Plan Z and this watch, besides your filth versus my filth, is that we have two very different sized wrists.
That's right. I have a lady wrist.
And I have a gorilla wrist. So I should remember the Samsonite commercial. I'm in the Samsonite cage. So,
anyway, I don't know that Rolex could just even do it. It seems like it's the same with cars. You get allocations and then the dealers decide the allocations. So I don't know that you can really go up that high at Rolex and get something, but maybe you can. But if you look at some of the guys that are in business with them, I don't know. Do we fit into that kind of like a Jensen Button? You know,
no, we're not yet.
He's making his own whiskey. He's a Formula One guy. And you've got all the tennis guys, you know, Alcaraz. And these are all champions. You look at us.
Slobs, rejects. I mean, but there is a market. We have a following and we should get it.
Yeah.
I could make my own pisky.
Your what?
Whiskey pisky.
Oh, whiskey pisky.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about the big June 8th announcement. A lot of folks are giving us credit for calling it right. A lot of folks are saying you had it, that this information that came in was right. I'm going to be a little more honest than that. I think we went on record saying it was the ST, and then a week before, my source said now it's the hypercar. The ST's been punted to August. There was no materializing of this 356 badged 911 limited to 100. That's just chatter at this point. But the new hypercar was announced.
I think our intel was relatively accurate. We were in the room with it.
Yeah.
We got close to it.
No, we did. We did say hypercar, but we did say a lot of things. But this June 8th announcement did yield a new car. They're calling it a concept now. It's called the Mission X. And what we did have right in our conversation with Jerry a few weeks back is it's an all-electric one-off supercar that the company is already saying could go into production. We're gonna ask our customers if they're interested in it, and we'll see.
They're teasing the reaction. They're getting much better about teasing the reaction on these things and ginning people up. They don't want to have the experiences like they had with the 918 or the Carrera GT, where the anticipation and the marketing was a little bit off. I think they're going to get it 100% right this time and sell every one of these things without question. And I'm ready for us to get in.
Well, they're already asking us about that. But let's dig into the car, okay? First, Porsche is saying this. Its vision is to create the fastest road-legal car on the Nürburgring, a record currently held by the Mercedes AMG One. The car, if it were to be produced, would achieve that goal through power-to-weight ratio 1 horsepower per 2.2 pounds, more downforce than the current GT3 RS, which is, a couple thousand pounds of downforce, an electrical system capable of charging about twice as quickly as the Taycan Turbo S, thanks to 900-volt architecture. Okay, doesn't mean a lot. I think the thing looked beautiful.
Gorgeous. 2917.
Wheels, 20 in front, 21s in back, translucent aero brakes that direct air away from the brakes, a glass dome Like you?
Like my head.
Like your head? A two-seat cabin. I love this detail. Le Mans-style doors inspired by?
The 917.
Wouldn't you think they would eventually perhaps name this the new 917? Why aren't we just going to say it out loud right now that this will be the new 917?
Seems why not logical. They've reused numbers?
You got the 918. For them to put in this sentence, Le Mans-style doors inspired by the 917, design to design emotion, you need heritage and you need parts of a car that you know from the past. So that's one reason. They can design a little emotion by saying a 917-style doors. They could also be saying, we're going to badge this the 917.
I would get behind it.
Right.
I wouldn't have it, but this car is enough of a car to be called a 917, in my opinion.
Two differently colored seats, which I absolutely adored. I loved it. A steering yoke for you yoke haters. Go yoke yourselves. Now Porsche is
doing
it.
Yokes on you.
Yeah.
Yeah, stupids.
Take your yoke and jam it up your ass.
Say it like my mother.
We don't want yokes. Yokes are stupid. Who is it that says that? One of our co-hosts. We won't name him by name. But look,
Matt.
Now.
Matt Farah.
But now look. Now look. And Porsche officially saying that gauging interest from clients before building. We know you're going to make it. We know you need this. And this is your car. It's really cool. Now, it's worth looking back a year, Zuckerman. 1 year ago, almost to this day, Porsche increased its investment in Rimac.
There you go.
Bugatti. Increased in Rimac.
All makes sense now.
Now, 2 weeks ago, I think we were talking about the Rimac Nevera, right? The 2,000 horsepower car that is now the fastest production car, or fastest car, if I get that wrong, sorry, that runs a quarter mile in 8.592 seconds, that has a 0 to 60 of 1.85, just a dash faster than the Tesla, and sprints to 100 in 4.3 seconds. And they're saying, do you see what they've done? Do you see what they did last year? And now the Rimac, and then they're saying we want it to be, I think, faster than this car?
They picked up that essential piece of the puzzle and jammed it in there.
Yes, they did.
Clever acquisition.
God damn it!
They're smart.
So good. And we had a nice lunch with our friends from Porsche Clearwater who were out here.
Great guy and great friends.
And let's be candid, we had that lunch because we want this car.
And he's going to deliver it to us.
He is?
I think so. I feel it.
All right.
Let's manifest it.
Let's manifest it. But first, let's talk about Nord VPN. Come up with some Nord comedy, Zuckerman. Nord.
Our jet fighter from Nord. The Nord 4 will be strafing.
I know what a nerd is, but what is a Nord?
It could be a nodule on your inner thigh.
What about the Nord? Wasn't the Nord the refrigerator repairman?
Yes.
Butt crack stood up?
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, Nord VPN. Get online protection with a single click. Stay safe from malware with threat protection. It's the fastest virtual private network on the planet. Threat protection shields you from malware, trackers, and ads. Dark web monitor notifies you if someone leaks your credentials. Dedicated IP helps you avoid, this is so good, captchas and block lists. They don't track your information. They don't share online. Your data is always protected by next-generation encryption. There's even a kill switch to make sure your data is never exposed. You get a 30-day money-back guarantee for all users, dedicated apps on all major platforms. What that means is you can add it to your browser and it makes things work quickly. How do I know? I have it. One account protects up to 6 devices, which is probably 1/3 of the devices I have personally. And guess what you get with it, Zuckerman? A Nord Pass that gets you into any nerd club. No. The Nord Pass is a password manager. I have, I think, currently 5,000 passwords, and now the Nord Pass password manager stores them all. I don't have to think. It just puts them in.
I need a soothing and cooling Nord pad.
Ooh.
For my Nords.
Here's my Nord Pass. Make love to me. Get your exclusive SCR and Nord VPN deal here at Nord, NordVPN.com/Spike911. Go to NordVPN.com/Spike911. and see the deal we're offering you. It's fantastic. It's risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Nord, welcome to Spike's Car Radio.
Nerd.
Nerd. Nerd VPN would be good. I think people would like that. All right, there's so much more show here, Zuckerman. I had to limit. So we got into the Porsches. I'm excited about this new car. I think it's really cool. I'm afraid of what they're saying it's going to cost. What would you guess that car cost?
1.6.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be.
It's going to be 1.6, and it's going to be very, very painful and difficult for us to arrange the financing of this.
What was the 918 when it was new? It was 800, right?
Well, but everyone got the WISAC package, so that was 945, I think, 950.
Oh, boy, Jesus.
So I'm predicting 1.6, and we're going to be looking at 30-year mortgages for this car.
And it's unclear whether there will be another VIP program, but if there is, this is going to be the car that they'll base it on.
And
right?
That's a guess. That's a really good question, because that prior VIP program, there were good parts and bad parts. It all depended on which side of the line you were.
Yes, yes. I only like the bad parts. Shut up, Zuckerman. suburb of Los Angeles, Pico Rivera, finally is going to combat street takeovers. Have you heard about this, Zuckerman? Here
yes,
we are. So
yes.
Goes California. So goes Pico Rivera City Council. So goes the world. They've added some of the most stringent laws.
Draconian.
No, I'm in favor of all this. After the kids were beaten on the Toyota MR2, I want it all stopped. Toyota initially passed a local ordinance allowing police to permanently confiscate vehicles used in illegal shows or street racing. So they can now
permanently. This is
good, right?
Well, yes.
Can you challenge that, do you think?
You have to, because I always worry about the misapplication. Like, some poor guy's just driving along. He's not involved in anything. He's made a wrong turn. He's not part of the takeover. He just went to Taco Bell and
is doing donuts.
Then his car, he just happens to be in the area, and his car gets seized forever.
Right, right.
So there could be. There could be abuses, but generally speaking, these takeovers do have to stop because the amount of people getting mauled.
Yeah.
But I do not like empowering police to have the right to see something permanently without any oversight.
I would guess, look, if you've got the car doing donuts and sliding around and you've got 100 kids with cameras and you've got evidence,
yes,
then why not take that person's car away?
Okay, and I hope that's the way it's used.
Yeah,
it's just not somebody driving past the takeover that looks the wrong way at the cops, says something snide, and then their car's gone.
Well, yeah. Yeah, can't do that.
Well, I'm a snide talker, so I think about myself in the situation.
Are you going to these street takeovers?
I'm not, but you've heard me talk to police officers.
Okay, here's where it gets good. Spectators within 500 feet of the sideshows can be fined up to $2,000 for watching the event.
Oh, bullshit.
500 feet is about two city blocks or even preparing for one. That's the new ordinance may become permanent in 30 days.
That part's going to be challenged. That part's definitely.
Can you enforce an ordinance?
You can try, but the problem is spectators within how many feet? 2,000 feet?
500 feet. Yeah, what if you happen to be selling tacos there and suddenly one starts and now you're standing there within 500 feet?
You're looking
because you don't want to get hurt.
You have a constitutional right to assembly. This is problematic.
Yeah.
This is definitely problematic.
Well, they have to do something.
They have to do something, and they're going to do it by going overboard and you know, it harkens back to remember all the laws in the 80s about cruise nights, cruise.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. These are a little different, though, because people are getting mowed down.
And that's part of the, I think, the attraction is getting the video of somebody falling out of the car or getting biffed by the back end of the car.
That's pretty good. It is pretty good.
I don't mind saying it, frankly.
So if I'm going to go to one of these, I'm going to stay 1,000 feet back. But look, I was willing to look I was willing to look the other way in the street takeovers until the MR2 got destroyed.
Yeah.
Now I'm pissed. Now I want them all stopped.
Go there. We'll be 501 feet with our opera glasses. Swiggins. Did you see that, Swiggins?
Look at that, Swiggins.
He really ate it.
That young man really ate shit as he flew out the window into the Carl's Jr. sign.
My, he has no skin on his backside.
Oh, like old Sheedy. Remember that? When he was dragged by the horse. No, I don't. Thank you, Swiggins. What else do we have here? Oh, here's some crime that you'd be into, Zuckerman. A lot of folks sent us this. Since we have a watch show with Cameron Weiss coming up, an interview with him. This story caught my attention. Criminal plot to sell Frankenstein fake Speedmaster watch for $3 million was aided by Omega employees.
Insiders.
Watchmaker says. Did you see this story?
Oh, yeah. It's juicy.
Let me fill everybody in so they understand what's going on. November 2021, Omega was thrilled to join the ranks of Rolex and Patek, luxury watchmakers whose vintage pieces have sold for millions of dollars. And a Speedmaster timepiece, a cult favorite among us, every man should have a Speedmaster, says Ben Clymer, and he's right. Had sold for 3.1 million Swiss francs, about 3.4 million. At today's exchange rate, didn't need those words. We don't care. The unusual watch featured a vibrant milk face, milk chocolate face.
Milk face.
Most kindergartners have a vibrant milk chocolate face, too. So weird when they describe things that way. Omega wrote in a press release at the time, which garnered extra attention given its status as a moonwatch, the design worn by NASA's astronauts during the first moon landing in 1969. The stainless steel watch is all the more unusual because of the fade on its dial, which is incredibly even throughout, coupled with the luminous material on both the dial and hands.
Luminous milk.
Aging to an attractive golden tone. That's not real! The piece sold by our friends at global auction house Phillips. We love Phillips.
Ouch, and we do love them.
Paul Boutros, those guys, but they were bamboozled. Had been estimated to sell for $87,000 to $131,000, somewhere in there. But after a fierce bidding war, the damn thing went to $3.4 million.
And it was a Fugazi.
Yep. Well, not really. Let's see. This is what they turned up. So following an investigation by Omega owner, the Swatch Group, and Swiss newspaper NZZ, the watch was discovered to be, yeah, you're right, a Frankenstein, a piece made up of various watch parts which hadn't originally been pieced together. In some cases, the parts didn't even fit together. But how did a fraudulent watch manage to make its way to a $3 million sale?
There was some, if you read the article, there's some very interesting details about the sleuthing.
Well, here it is. First, Omega CEO Reinhold Eisschlimmer.
Eisschlimmer?
I don't know. It's not Ronald. He changed the O to an A-Y. So I think his original name was Ronald Eisschlimmer, and he changed it to Reinhold Eisschlimmer.
I can't pronounce either.
But he has alleged that three former staffers were in on the scam. I think you want to use the word scheme when you say this thing, right? Because that's technically a scheme.
It's a scheme.
Right.
It's a plot. It's a scheme.
The initial findings have provided clear evidence that three former employees were involved in this operation with clear criminal intent to the massive detriment of Omega.
Massive.
Is it really?
No,
it's a vintage watch. I mean, you can't. I mean, in the vintage watch world, you don't really blame the manufacturer for things that are old, right?
What decades I like about old. This is that they.
But
tell
I guess,
you
but
exactly,
they did work for Omega.
They
I
did,
guess.
But yeah, they, yeah. But Omega also can tell you exactly what it is that's phony about this thing, and that was the good part.
Well, I've got that stuff. But listen, there's more. They confronted these guys with the facts. And the three Omega guys quickly confessed to acting fraudulently.
These Swiss guys don't know how to take a beating.
Oh, we did it. I'm sorry.
Give us back our chocolate.
Please, Reynolds. Please don't take our chocolates away.
One question and they
Reynolds.
Folded.
Tie them to the chair. No, Reynolds, you cannot take this into your own hands. Get the horn.
Get those Swiss horns.
Heat up the mainsprings. We're going to burn their eyes with watch parts. Reynolds just he was looking forward to torturing these guys. The ex-employee worked in tandem with intermediaries to purchase the watch for the Omega Museum. I don't even... This thing is really a plot. All right. The work to pull it off, the scheme required thousands of dollars, such as replacing hands on the watch and even making it slightly radioactive, Zuckerman. I'm not lying. A component keen buyers would test for with a Geiger counter.
Do the noise. Do the Geiger counter noise. Can you do it?
This is not a forgery. Listen, clicks. I have leukemia. It's real. What is going on in the watch world? The forgery is so sophisticated, they say. Yeah, was it? But the pieces didn't fit together. I don't know.
The bridging wasn't right.
A spokesman for Phillips told Fortune it is most concerned to have been targeted by organized criminal activity, but did not comment on why they didn't figure it out. Why they didn't figure out. Why any auction house, not just Phillip, anybody, you're potentially in trouble. You've got to make sure you check out this stuff
yourself.
Here's
the problem. Only the people at Omega,
yes,
the real people who made these watches would know the secret little things that were wrong with this watch.
Yes.
That's the issue.
Yeah. Well, they found out. I don't know how they do it.
Well, they took the watch apart and they realized there were elements of the watch, materials used that didn't exist at the time, and certain techniques and certain pieces that were incorrect. How many fake watches are out there? Because in this case, Omega bought it for their museum, so they had a real incentive to look at this thing critically.
There's the old cliche, tip of the iceberg. I think in the watch world, it's tip of the planet Jupiter.
Yes.
I think most watches are fake in the vintage world. They really are. And you really need to trust your watch guys. You need to make sure if you're buying from them. And Phillips is a very trustworthy auction house that's been setting records. And let's hope they caught the one that went through. We talked to our stupid friend Moise, who we love.
Yes.
I shouldn't call him stupid. But
what's wrong with that?
Well, I know. I love Moise. He's a terrific guy. And he's always talking about the fraud in the art world. He's an art aficionado. And there's all sorts of fraud there, too.
Anywhere
millions
there's money.
Millions of dollars of fake paintings.
Anywhere there's money, Ferriston, there's fraud. Cars, fake watches. How about just fake money called counterfeit money?
I'm looking at a fraud right now.
I am a fraud. Everything from my head to my toes. It's all fake.
Hey, before I forget. Still, there's more to talk about. You know, we have an official tire sponsor on the show now.
Who is that?
Vredestein. Vredestein is now our friends from Holland, the Dutch tire maker that has been making tires, a European brand dating back to the 1900s, making it one of the oldest and most respected tire brands in the world, is now the official tire sponsor of Spike's Car Radio. Ultra high performance tires in the industry cars. They called up. They want to put tires on all of the cars. We've begun here at the Ferriston House. Mr. Seinfeld has acquired tires for a couple of his fringe cars that we'll talk about a little later.
Good.
And Zuckerman, anything you want.
I'm going to make a list.
So, and it should solve a problem. It should solve a problem. So when I chatted with them for the first time and thanked them for jumping on board Spike's Car Radio, the Vredestein representative said, where would you like to start? Where are your tire problems? I said, I have a couple. I was caught in a little bit of trouble up in Lake Tahoe over the summer, sliding down a hill, a little embarrassing. They said, we're going to resolve that. But I said, but first and foremost, my wife's Model Y is a little noisy. The tires are a little noisy, and they're a little destroyed from the way she runs into things with them, curbs and other things. So what did they do? They put a set of Quattrac Pros on there, which is adds a quiet, comfortable ride and better handling, crisp steering response, increased water evacuation from treads, a true all-weather tire, a one-tire solution for drivers who want year-round performance. They were designed by tire designer Ital Design Giugiaro. And they're optimized for powerful cars and SUVs. I can just tell you, I drove the car, and it's completely different. It's wonderful.
Really?
Yeah, it reduced sound by about, I would say, maybe 20%. I don't know what was on there before, but what was there was not doing its job. And these guys sent over here. I'm just looking for the pics here. I think they sent a company over named Zip Tire. Yeah, here they are. The Zip Tire guys just showed up. This mobile tire place. They took the wheels off, put on new tires, balanced them, put them on the car. I was done in like 20 minutes.
They got the spinny thing inside their van?
Look at that. Yeah, they got the spinny thing in the van, Zip Tire. So, Fredestein, thank you for revolutionizing my wife's tire and ride. And one day in, you know what she did?
She gaffed it.
She curbed the new one. I'll post a picture of the new ruined tire that she just ruined. But three of the four are already good.
Well, it's all you need, right?
But when she came in and she said, I'm really sorry.
Oh, that's big.
I said, don't worry. Fredestein will replace it for you.
She apologized?
She knew these were brand new. She's a very nice person.
Well, that's a huge admission. She gets credit. Gold star to your wife for admitting that she...
Well,
that
she was excited to have the new tires. Her tires were just destroyed.
Were you letting her drive on bald tires?
They were bald, yeah. But after 2 years. But I think that's just a component of a heavier SUV. And we drive the hell out of that car. And when I took them off and I had a look, I went, wow. He goes, yeah, these tires need...
So Fredestein is the oldest tire company?
Yeah, yeah.
From the Dutch East Indies, they used to suck the rubber out of trees.
One of the oldest.
You understand the connection to colonialism in the late 1800s.
Let's not go in there.
What's wrong with that?
They're our new sponsor.
Okay, just pointing out history.
Fredestein. The Zagato came with Fredestein tires on it. Did
really?
You know that? Yeah, yeah, it did. It came right out of Italy with it.
I am very excited to put that new Nardi 61 vintage real Nardi steering wheel on that.
New Nardi.
New old Nardi.
My name is New Nardi. All right, we're already at 35 minutes here. We'll keep going. There's so much more to talk about. I've got to get to Range Rover Sport First Edition and give you just a first drive impression.
And at some point, I have to tell you that I was back east with the memory people at my mother's.
That may have to wait.
That may have to wait. Hopefully, I don't forget.
Maybe you need to be one of the memory people.
I am.
We'll do that next week. We'll do a Le Mans recap with Johnny. We'll do a Dear Zuckerman, and we'll catch up on all of that. Range Rover Sport First Edition landed in my driveway. The redesigned, I think it's a full redesign on that car.
I had
the Range Rover. I had been waiting for the Sport. I'm a little late to it.
What do you think?
Let me just go through some stats.
Okay.
4.4 liter twin turbo, which you can hear for the first time. You get on it. It's a V8, this first edition. 523 horsepower, 8-speed auto. Fuel economy, as expected, 16.21. Firenze red. It's got all these lovely little things in it. But what do I think of it?
Yeah.
It's perfect.
It's really good looking.
You know I'm a fan of this model. Like, I look at the whole Land Rover range and I go, what am I going to lease for my next daily, right? And last time it was the Defender, which I've enjoyed, but my lease is coming up. I got into this thing and there's an added soft, luxury, close the doors, quiet comfort that I haven't experienced in the Range Rover Sport before. Soft seats where you go, you know, the world shut out. The drive with the V8, which is the first time I would recommend the V8, get the V8. You've got speed. It's not too loud. It makes a nice little, you can hear the turbos whine when you get on it. And this car just takes care of you. It's got a big screen. I think it's a 13-inch info screen now. Get the clear view mirror. I think it's what they call it. So the rear view is not the reflection of the mirror. It is a video monitor. Way better. Your life is way better with that. You don't have to be playing with it and moving it. It's very crisp and clear, and it sees more than the rear will see.
It's got this amazing little flap in the back. So you open up the hatch, right? And you pull this flap up, and it sits and holds your grocery bags.
Really?
Yeah. Built
Clever,
into
finally.
It.
Finally.
Clever, right? Really fun. Or in our case, tennis rackets and the rest of it.
Corpses.
Everybody's like, but what is the infotainment? It all connected perfectly. And it's got a little wireless thing. You tuck your phone under the dash so you don't have to hold it. It made my life. I had it for a week. I loved it. Everybody who got into it loved it. It was just, if you're looking for that family SUV, it's expensive. This one, I think, is up over 100, might have been 125 sticker. If you're in the market for this and you're thinking this might be a great thing, you're right. You're right. If you can afford that, get it. You'll love it. It will make your daily driving, sitting in traffic, hauling the family around. It'll make it worth it.
I want to see a return to the Range Rover Sport for you. I really think you fit in a Range Rover Sport. You had one.
More than the Defender?
110%. You in a Range Rover Sport, that was the car that suited you. I thought you looked right in it. It fits you. Mm. It fit your life. It was not too much of your too sporty or too Defender-y, but it hit the sweet spot for you.
It hits the sweet spot for the lifestyle, right?
Yes. West Side guy.
So it's definitely a contender now. Defender, Sport, two contenders. And then I'm going to have to look at electrics, the EQ line, the Mercedes EQ line, all of that electric stuff. It's right on my radar right now.
You better be careful. There are a lot of EQ lemons out there.
Really?
Yeah.
And Kia. I'm looking at all sorts of Kia electrics as well.
But the software issues that Mercedes is having with the EQ line.
I haven't heard about that.
I am hearing this, a lot of anecdotal chatter from my lemon law people about these Benzes being duds. And if they come effed up, they're not able to fix them.
I heard that about a Porsche Cayenne the other day.
Yeah.
That was just returned.
Absolutely.
But it wasn't electric. It was just.
Really?
It was effed up and they had to replace it.
Was it the software or controlling?
No, it never worked right. I mean, I think that happens on a bunch of them. I had the press cars and they worked flawlessly. I had no problem with it.
Right.
It was just the charging network that was the deal. But, you know, Tesla just made a deal. It's so interesting to watch Tesla right now, right? The company, in a way, is somewhat self-immolating in the PR world because of Elon Musk's political positions falling apart. Erica finally came to me and she said, I'm done with this brand. And I said, I understand. In the same breath, you don't know where to go because there's not a supercharging network like Tesla. They've really done that piece right.
Right.
Well, they have now made a deal with Ford and I believe GM, Tesla, Ford, and GM, to allow, I think, those manufacturers to use the same plug and or the same charging station with an adapter.
There you go.
Right?
There you go, big.
And I can't tell if that's them bailing on making cars anymore because they know they're in a little bit of trouble or, you know what I'm saying?
Well, it's an indication that they've got something.
Yeah.
They've got a chess piece that everyone else needs.
Yeah, because if you're going to make your company political, which they've done, how are you going to sell those cars in the red states? How do you do that? Do those people want them? I don't think they do. Right? It doesn't fit in. But
people in the red states will buy Ford 150s that are electric all day long, don't you figure?
Well, that's a great car, yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, the head of Ford isn't out there saying stupid shit.
If
what?
Yeah.
Maybe they are. They say it privately. Say it privately. Anyway, I'm what would hold me back from the Mercedes EQ line is this Electrify America. Forget it. It's not good. Tesla really does. That charging network, what you want is to take your Mercedes to the Tesla charging network. If I could arrange that, that would be a perfect situation for me.
You also don't want your Mercedes EQ to lock you out.
Yeah.
Or to go into some sort of limp mode while you're on the freeway. Well,
yes, this is all new technology and there's going to be issues, but we have to go there. I mean, here's the other thing. Somebody fires Elon Musk and Tesla does just fine. Tesla does well. You know, they continue to improve their cars. We like them, and they don't have an image problem right now to deal with.
Wouldn't bother me.
But the number of people, and I have to, I'm saying this out loud into the mics, the number of people who have told me they're done with Tesla now because of that guy, it caught my attention. This is in the last 3 weeks. One of them from the other side of the aisle, I would say.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. They just don't like stupidity. They just don't like stupidity.
Yeah, that's a universal dislike.
I don't know what that means for me because I'm technically an independent. I'm not a political person. I'm a registered independent. I don't want there to be an assumption that there's anything behind any comments I might make about anything. So that's why I stay in the middle. Stay out of it. Satirist. It's the satirist position. When you want to satirize, that's what you do. All right, let's see what else there is here. There's only one other thing, Zuckerman, that I think will get up your ire. All right? One small thing, and then we'll get to Cameron Weiss. The Drive, you know The Drive, the website? They have a kind of Ask the Drive, kind of like a Dear Zuckerman.
Yeah.
They Ask the Drive. And I think they might have had an intern up one day when a guy named At Brew asked, are ceramic brakes on the road, on a road car, just to flex? And the person there said, yep. The Drive said, yes, they are. They're just to flex.
That's very controversial.
And then they tweeted it out, The Drive, and I went, what? What are you talking about? Here's their answer. I'm being told I have to explain myself, the guy said. Boo. But yeah, ceramic brakes are just a flex, said this anonymous writer from The Drive. Ceramic brakes dissipate heat better than iron rotors, but the heat range you'll be working with on the road just is not enough to justify using them. They're designed for race pace, not street pace. It's just weird rich people flexing. You'd have to be using your supercar at 8 to 10 tenths for them to actually be worth it. And you aren't doing that on the street, or rather, you really shouldn't be. So,
how about I don't like brake dust? What about that? What about I don't like putting brake dust in the world?
And on well, my rims? Should we try to educate the reason why people spend the extra money on carbon ceramic brakes? One, also, they require a longer manufacturing time, so it costs more money. They massively reduce brake fade, for example. They weigh less.
Less unsprung weight, you mean?
Around 36 pounds, let's say, versus ceramic rotor weights, which are 16, 20 pounds less. The lower weight has major implications for performance.
With and feel.
From feel. Motor Authority did a great piece on it. Cutting their weight reduces rotational inertia, which can improve acceleration times. Who wants improved acceleration? Reduce the weight of the brake components also cuts unsprung mass, the mass not supported by the suspension, which can improve both grip and ride quality. There's
Indeed.
Nothing about at speed here, is there?
Indeed.
They are also dimensionally stable, meaning they won't deform at high temperatures and cause brake judder. Have you ever hit your brakes hard in ceramic brakes? I have felt that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic. They also have a longer lifespan. Generally, owners won't need to replace them during the life of the car.
Ever.
Carbon ceramic's lower wear rate also reduces brake dust, which can damage wheels and is a source of air pollution. Should we keep going, Drive?
Flex this.
You know what this is? The Drive, who I love. They in fact, most of the news that we get and we talk about on the show, The Drive is there on it. They're really actually very, very entertaining. I like the whole operation. But this ChatGPT answer to this question.
Significant misfire.
And it's a significant misfire. And that's okay. It happened to Phillips. It happened to The Drive.
It's happened to me.
It's happened to us. We've misfired. Anyway. Let's get to our interview. It's time to do our interview here. So, Cameron Weiss from the Weiss Watch Company, I believe is what he calls it, friend of Matt Farah. They used to do a watch podcast together. When we posted the show about J.N. Shapiro and the rebirth, the renaissance of American watchmaking, immediately people were like, well, what about Weiss Watch Company and RMG and these other companies? And very quickly, you know, I started chatting with my watch friends online and some of the people I trust. And A very interesting, in this article that made that declaration, the writer whose name, I can't remember his name, but Mark from Hodinkee, he said, this is going to be potentially controversial, but I think a little healthy debate here is good. And I didn't really understand what he was saying until I chatted here with Cameron. And, you know, we started digging in to what the Federal Trade Commission calls made in the USA, the history with Shinola when they made that claim and got really big and then had to back off it, assembled in the USA, and how, and if you even can get any sort of certificate or paperwork or permission from the FTC to even do this. And what does it mean? What is Weiss Watches? What is Jay and Shapiro? And what are these other companies, these guys that are machining and building? What does that even mean? Pay close attention, Zuckerman, to where, to what happens when we get to the qualification for Swiss made. Here you go. Here's my interview with Cameron Weiss. Cameron, good to see you, my friend. Or at least hear
great
you.
To be talking with you.
Yeah. Last time I saw you, you were out here, and now where are you?
Now I'm in Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, it's nice there. I have friends that moved from LA to Nashville and just absolutely love it.
Right, it's a good spot. It's I'm definitely dealing with the humidity now and trying to get used to that.
Did you do you still have the old Land Rover?
Yeah, I've got the 2A, and then I actually just got myself a 92 Defender from Sardinia.
Wow. You really?
Yeah, so I'm moving up.
You're going for it.
Yeah. One's got the air conditioning.
I still can't.
Essential here.
Yeah. You need it. I can't get over how that Series 2A steers. I've not been able to replicate the steering that you had that day at Matt Farah's place when I turned the wheel of your truck. And, well, I went, damn, I'm not done.
Yeah, it's a constant work in progress, but yeah, I think it drives great.
All right, well, we're here to talk about watches. Let's just dive right into the Hodinkee piece where Mark Kozlarich wrote about J.N. Shapiro watches. And there was, you know, we did that interview with Joshua last week or maybe the week before, and right away in the comments in the post, people said, well, what about Cameron Weiss? What about Cameron Weiss? What was your reaction to that piece when you read Hodinkee say this J.N. Shapiro watches was the very first fully American manufactured watch since Hamilton in the 60s?
I was confused. It was like I was in the Twilight Zone or something, because I actually we had an article in the LA Times back in 2016 that was almost identical to the one that that was in the LA Times recently about J.N. Shapiro. So it was confusing to hear that info.
Mark,
but I think the U.S. industry for watches is, I mean, it's alive and well, and it's growing slowly. But I mean, really since about the 90s, there's been some resurgence in U.S. watchmaking.
I think, you know, what he's trying to get at, and he even says it here. Let me read what he wrote in the article, because it's interesting, and it kind of lays the foundation of this interview. There are a lot of companies that proudly claim at least a portion of their watchmaking is done in the United States. But after a lot of research, I'm inclined to believe that Joshua Shapiro is the first to really be able to lay stake to the claim of made in America. Then he says it's going to be a topic that will likely elicit a lot of debate, but I think it's a debate that will serve American watchmaking well and push it further. So he's, I think, in this article acknowledging, look, I know I'm making a claim about my belief, and I know it's going to cause a stir debate. Do you really feel that there's a difference between Weiss watches and J.N. Shapiro watches? I mean, as far as I can tell, nobody has had the Federal Trade Commission give them any paperwork, right? How does that even work? You know, according to the article, Made in the USA is a very strict guideline, and there needs to be a blessing from the Federal Trade Commission to get it. And that means that pretty much all of your watch, a very high percentage, has to be not only assembled in the United States, it has to be manufactured. The parts have to be manufactured in the United States. How do you view that?
It's a strange one, because a lot of it has to do with the perception of the buyer, right? The people you're marketing a product to. The FTC really is just trying to keep people from misleading.
Right.
So it's based on what the consumer sees your advertising as, right? It could be you saying something is made in USA, or it could be plastering American flags all over something in the hopes that the buyers will think that the item is made in the USA. So actually writing anything like USA or made in USA or made in America on a product is making a claim that that product was all or virtually all manufactured, made, the raw materials were sourced from the U.S., everything really.
Right. And so what do you do? I mean, tell us about Weiss Watches.
So I machine watch parts here in the U.S. However, there's a lot of alloys that are involved in watchmaking that we can't get here in the U.S. One of them that I looked into was tantalum, right? And there are some makers like Jan Shapiro who make parts out of tantalum, but there are no tantalum producers here in the U.S. So you can't actually make a watch case out of tantalum and call it made in USA.
Interesting.
Which is a strange little detail. But when you get into it, it's really, does the average watch buyer think you're misleading them? Or are they happy knowing that that part was machined here, even though it's not a domestic alloy?
Right.
Right? For me, I don't care so much about everything down to the level of where did that material come from? You know, where on earth was it pulled from? I'm more interested in seeing actual craftspeople here in the U.S. working on things, even if that means the wire came from somewhere else or the bar of steel came from somewhere else. I think the people and the craftspeople, that's what we want to kind of rebuild here.
Right, right. I mean, it seems like, I mean, a lot of this started really, I think, from just a buyer and watch fan point of view with Shinola. Shinola, I remember I was in Detroit shooting a car thing with Matt Farah, Car of the Year or something, nonsense like that. And we were invited over to Shinola, and I didn't know who they were. And I walked in, and they said, "We're an American watchmaking company. We're making watches here." And we were like, wow, fantastic idea, right? It hits you all over. You're like, I'm really behind this whole idea. And they get big, and they're saying made in the USA, which is something the Federal Trade Commission has control over. And they see that and they go, not so fast. Your watches are parts that are being assembled in the United States, not made here for the most part. You've got to now retract that. And I remember being kind of let down by Shinola, by going, that was a little too far. But then, you know, you get deeper into this watch thing and you look at what the Swiss do, for instance, right? It seems like they're even more lax about Swiss made when you see that stamped on the back of a watch. That only, I think, and maybe I'm wrong and you can correct me, that only 60% of parts have to be Swiss. And they can come from Asia or wherever else. They just have to be assembled in Switzerland. Am I right about that?
You're completely right. And actually, a big part of my business here, I make watch parts that I sell to Swiss companies. And they go into Swiss-made watches. So we send main plates and bridges and screws and pinions.
It's so interesting. It's so interesting. So, you know, there's the initial, I think, consumer bubble which is for most of us just sitting on the sidelines and seeing an advertisement that goes, hey, an American-made watch. Wow. I like that idea. Then there's the watch geek level of, hey, this is how we're really doing it. Where, you know, like in your case, we're a smaller company, and I don't know that you're doing this, but I hear other companies, they harvest Swiss movements and they reassemble them the way they, I don't know, a bunch of stuff I don't get. And then there's the Federal Trade Commission, who's stepping in and kind of you make a claim, you get too big, we're going to now take a look at you, or there has to be a complaint against you, like Shinola. And you can't say that because it's not true. And then there's, you know, what's really happening out in the world. Like until I learned that about the Swiss, to me, that was the standard. It's like Swiss made. That was an ironclad standard. And we want American watchmaking to be up to that standard. Now, it turns out, it looks like American watchmaking has a higher standard than Swiss made, right?
Right. Yeah, it definitely does.
It definitely does.
And I actually, so here in my workshop, we do Swiss movements, mm-hmm. but also American movements. Mm-hmm. And then obviously other parts, cases and dials and crowns and straps and buckles and all of that. But it seems like a lot of the focus is on the movement itself, because that's the most complex part to actually make.
Right.
And some of the things like hair springs, there's no other industry that needs a hairspring for timing purposes. So making a tiny little hairspring, and the reason they call it a hairspring is that it is actually slightly thinner than a human hair. It is like drawn from a piece of wire a special alloy, mm-hmm. and then it is shaped into a rectangular profile, and then it's curved into a little snail type curvature, right? And then from there, it needs to be bent and formed to actually fit into a watch and cut to length so it matches a balance wheel weight. And really, all the hairspring is, it's just like the string on a pendulum. But it's been curled up, and it's a special alloy for fitting inside of a wristwatch. But all this little magical kind of secretive Swissness doesn't really exist here in the U.S. There are some people that make springs similar to hairsprings, but they're for really simple things like returning the needle of a gauge back to zero.
Right.
Right. It's not doing any precision timing. It's just springing a little needle back to position.
How did you get into this business of making watches? You know, when I talked to Joshua Shapiro, he said he read this book on watchmaking, the Bible. I forget the name of it, but he said there's a Bible on how to make watches. What was your entry point?
So I started as a pretty young kid collecting watches. And then I had a neighbor who was a garage saler. And this was when I was in middle school, and he started bringing back some pretty cool garage sale finds, like vintage Rolexes and things of that sort. Mm-hmm. But when he would find some less expensive watches, he'd give them to me, even broken watches and things like that. So that kind of opened my eyes to a different kind of watch, as opposed to the cheap digital quartz and stuff like that I had been collecting. And he started showing me stuff like Gruen watches that he would pick up at a garage sale. And then I learned about watchmakers. Prior to that, I had no idea that there were people actually sitting at workbenches making watches.
Right,
I
right.
I just thought of it as an item that existed and didn't think about the creation of mm-hmm. it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up going to college for a little while, but I dropped out to go. I went to USC actually for business, and I decided that was not for me. So I dropped out and took a job for like $10 an hour working in a machine shop just to try and learn some modern manufacturing methods. From there, I went to a Swiss watchmaking school, a Swiss operated watchmaking school in the U.S. Did 2 years there.
What is that like? Were there a lot? Can I ask you about, were there a lot of frat parties there and keggers?
Oh yeah, it was wild at watchmaking school. You wouldn't believe how wild we get.
I don't even know what that means. Was there dormed? Were you guys, all the watchmaking guys, you know, doing bong hits at night and woo, partying? Let's get the watches out. More, how many girls were at watchmaking school?
We had none in our class. It was just six guys and two teachers.
At the time, right? You know, I went to Berklee College of Music way back when, and it was the same. It was all dudes with guitars. And I walked in, I went, oh, no. I hope I love the guitar as much as I think I do.
If you go to Switzerland or Europe, it's mostly women.
Who
are getting into watchmaking.
Wow, fantastic.
Here in the U.S., it's not quite as balanced. There's
you need to go to American women, watchmaking school in Switzerland. That's where you have to go, the American right? one.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
So I did that, and then afterwards, I worked for Audemars Piguet.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I worked for Vacheron Constantin. And with both of them, I trained in more complex watches.
Mm-hmm.
Things like perpetual calendars and different complications that make a watch significantly more complex. A simple time-only watch might have 120 pieces.
Mm-hmm.
If you get into something like a grand complication where you're going to have multiple complications on one watch, you could have 1,500 pieces in the same size watch.
Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah. Well, and then after that, I started Weiss.
And there you go. And there you are. And now you're cranking out these watches. Is it just you making these watches in the workshop? Or do you have a team of watchmakers?
It's just me. So I have four very advanced CNC machines
mm-hmm.
that cut parts from bar. And what that does for me, the big benefit, is that I cut a part off the end of a bar and it falls off the bar when it's done, or it is processed a little differently with a clamp and then cut the last final side. But when that part is finished, I don't have to do anything. I don't have to go over to the machine and load another block of metal. The bar is 6 feet long and the part just gets cut off the end, and then another part is cut and another part. So all of our machines can actually run overnight without me even here making parts.
Wow.
I'm only necessary for designing the parts, setting up the machines, and then also once those parts are made, I'm the guy sitting there hand finishing, polishing, decorating, all of those little things, and then finally assembly.
Wow. So truly handmade. If you guys want to check it out, WeissWatchCompany.com is where you can see his fine work. I'm looking at your stuff right now. I like these Weiss Cordura canvas straps. It's a very cool looking watch here.
The biggest thing for me in trying to do this in the U.S. is to actually try to create a bit of an industry here, something that could grow. I want to see more people interested in mechanical watches. So accessibility mm-hmm. is big for me, trying to keep the cost relatively low
mm-hmm.
because we use CNC machines and advanced manufacturing to be able to produce higher volume, but still with that traditional mechanical movement. I just want to see more people aware of mechanical watches.
And who who are the others? So you have J.N. Shapiro Watch Company, you have Weiss Watches. Who are the other ones that should be on our radar as far as American watchmakers?
So you've also got Roland G. Murphy, who has been making watch movements here in the U.S. since the 90s. He's probably the first person actually to make a U.S.-made watch since Hamilton shut down.
This is RGM Watch Company.
Yeah, RGM Watch Company.
I'm checking them out now. Oh, yeah, look at that. Very American looking.
Right.
Very nice.
You got a very, a lot of influence from like the pocket watches and railroad type clocks.
Yeah. Their GMT is a little more modern and interesting and unique for sure. And a lot of it looks very vintage. And then they have a nice dive watch here. Oh yeah. That's neat. Who else?
Right. And then you've also got a gentleman by the name of Keaton Myrick, who is in Oregon. And he produces a very limited number of watches. I think it's maybe 10 watches a year, but he does it with a mix of some like wire EDM and some pretty high tech manufacturing methods, but also some really old school equipment.
Yeah.
Manually operated lathes and things like that to finish and decorate. And it's just some of the most beautifully decorated watches made today.
Yeah. I'm looking at them. They're signed on the back and dated and very, you know, it's such an interesting area. It looks like an American watch, but also a luxury watch on the back. They have their own vibe to them. They're not trying to be something that they're not. It's interesting. There's this whole little new sliver.
Right. Wow. And then I'd say another one.
They're not dated. They're
definitely.
They're numbered on the back. I see 1 of 30, 0 of 30. That's interesting. Who else?
There's also Dan Spitz, heavy metal rocker, who has a background.
Oh, yeah. Look at him.
He's been watchmaking for, I think, longer than I've been alive.
Wow.
He also had a music career in the middle of an unbelievable watchmaking career where he worked and trained in Switzerland for some top watchmakers.
Yes.
And now he's making watches here in the U.S. that are completely handmade.
So he was the guitar player for a band called Anthrax.
Yes.
He also founded a Christian music group called Red Lamb. And now he's making watches. Boy, that guy.
Right? Pretty unbelievable story there.
That's
him.
A good resume.
Right?
I like that. Well, look, it seems like we're at the beginning of something pretty amazing in the United States here.
Yeah.
A whole U.S.
I think there's a lot to come with U.S.-made watches in the future. It's exciting.
Yeah, and you're there at the center of it. So is our new friend Josh Shapiro and our Anthrax guitarist friend, Dan Spitz. It's cool. Well, thanks for coming on the show and talking to us and helping us understand this whole thing. I feel like I'm starting to get it, and I'm excited about this, and that I think we should be a little less preoccupied with the percentages of parts and more focused on guys like yourself, you know, building things and making things right here in the United States.
Yeah, a little bit more about the why, not so much all the tiny little percentages.
I love it. All right. Well, Cameron, go drive your Series 2A, and I'll chat with you later.
Yeah. Hey, and I got one more thing. If anyone wants to get super nerdy about watches, I've got a YouTube channel called The Watchmaker's Workshop, and I pretty much do incredibly deep dives into the tiniest little details of watchmaking. I just did one on the mainspring, and it was like 15 minutes just about mainsprings.
Wow.
So if you really want to nerd out,
you get granular.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going there right after this. That sounds like fun. All right. Thanks, Cameron.
All right. Well, good talking to you.
So there you go.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Swiss made. Did you know that?
Yes.
You did know that
I knew that it did not have to be 100% content made in Switzerland.
60.
And that's too low. It should be 80. Come on.
But isn't it interesting that if we're it's the rebirth of American made watches, and we're trusting Swiss made as the gold standard.
And it's not Swiss made, it's 60%.
Asian watch parts are coming in, and they're assembling them there. All you have to do is assemble the watch in Switzerland, and then you can say Swiss made.
Yeah.
That doesn't that then pave the way for the end of this debate that who these guys are machining most of the parts for their watches and making the watches here. The American watches have a very distinct design. That's an amazing starting point that has that they look like the older heritage watches. It's their own thing, and we should be encouraging everybody.
And not crapping on them.
Cameron Weiss, Josh Shapiro, the whole group of America, all of you guys out there that want to start.
Keep going.
Keep building American watches.
I mean, and you see this on your window sticker on cars. It'll tell you what the content is.
Right.
Take a look at the next time you look at a window sticker. It'll give you an idea of this.
Well, I'm just impressed that the American guys are working harder than it seems like these other watchmakers are around the country.
The Swiss.
I'm going to play a little more Le Mans right here. Look at that. That's our show. I am going back to my house to watch more of this. That's the Toyota number 7 car. All right, we'll see you next week on Spike Car Radio.
Thanks for listening to Spike's Car Radio, brought to you by Hangar 56. Listen to new episodes every Wednesday, and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time, or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.